The views, opinions, and content of the show hosts and their guests appearing on America's Web Radio are their own and do not necessarily reflect those of the station.
You're listening to America's Web Radio on the AmericasBroadcastNetwork.com. Thank you for listening.
Welcome to America's Web Radio. This is Ron Bachman, and you're listening to Healthcare Insight. Today, we've got a great program. What I want to do is I want to profile the leading Republican candidate for president in 2024, and that is former President Donald J. Trump. Now, he's been interviewed in a number of programs, Meet the Press, Univision, and he's had a chance to sort of outline a number of issues. Many people haven't seen those. Many of you are supporters of Donald Trump that are listening to this program, and you probably know the answers already, and you're already decided, you know, which way you want to vote. You may also be listening to this program and say, wait a second, I loved his policies. I didn't like his attitude or his tweets. I didn't like his punching down, if you will, to people that were certainly not at his level, whether it's celebrities or sports stars or just famous people in general. I will tell you personally, I loved his policies. I think from the standpoint of policy, he was maybe the best president, or certainly ranks there with Ronald Reagan in terms of policy introductions, conservative basic principles that were implemented. I loved his domestic policies, his energy policies, his closing the border, his foreign policy, the Abraham's accords that were bringing peace to the Middle East. Programs that were withdrawing from Afghanistan with some honor and wouldn't have gone through the disaster that Biden put us through. There's so many positives, but yet there's a great deal of hate towards Donald Trump. And whether you want to accept it or not, the final tallies were like 85 million votes for Biden, who didn't even get out and campaign. He stayed in his basement. And there were about 75 million votes for Donald Trump. So a difference of 10 million votes, whether they were ballot stuffed, whether they were manipulated, whatever it is, I think to a large degree, there may be some truth in that, and I'll talk about that before we get into hearing from President Trump himself. But the point I think I'd like to make to many of the listeners out there is that hate is a very powerful motivator to get to the polls, not just dislike, not just, well, I'm going to vote for the lesser of two evils, as many in the past several decades have had to make that choice. There wasn't a whole lot of difference between Republicans and Democrats. Now there is. And certainly Donald Trump, in his disruptive way, in his attitude and demeanor, and the way he brings that to the politics, disclosing things and exposing things that have been covered up for a long time, that have really hurt the American people, that the globalization that was going on that started with George Bush, basically, those things were hurting the middle class. That was hurting Americans when jobs were being shipped overseas, many manufacturings were going to China. Any product that was brought forward, if you ever listened to the program Shark Tank, every product that was brought forward for many years during that period of time, first question many of the sharks would ask of a entrepreneur is, can you take that overseas and lower the price of it? So that's what we were dealing with during that period of time. And people didn't know how it could be different until Donald Trump came on the scene. When he came down that escalator with Melania, as he likes to say, the world changed. It targeted him. And throughout his presidency, there were very unfair targeting of him, whether it was the Russia gate, whether it was the dossier that was funded, ultimately we discovered, by the Democrats, Democrat National Committee, whether it was the two impeachments that had absolutely no bearing on reality except for the Democrats controlled the House of Representatives, and the hatred was so infused in them that they voted unanimously, basically to impeach him, which then created a trial in the Senate that he was found not guilty and stayed in office, but it still created that sort of political circus. Now we get to the 2020 election. Clearly the election, I don't know if the right word is that he uses, that it was rigged or that it was not constitutional, because the Constitution says that only state legislatures can structure the elections in their state. And clearly what was happening with COVID is that people were taking, whether it's politicians or judges, were taking power that they didn't have constitutionally. They changed the way the elections were run. They changed the way ballots were counted. They changed the way ballots were collected. And they don't have the power to do that. And so he uses the word rigged, which for many people may have a different connotation, but I think I understand what he's saying, is that the procedures and policies that were in place during the 2020 election were such that it opened it up for more fraud. It opened it up for ballots being counted that normally wouldn't be counted. There were what would otherwise be illegal ballots because they weren't properly signed. They weren't properly checked for mail-in ballots. Normally there's somewhere between, I think, 4 and 5% of mail-in ballots that are disqualified. And given the looser rules that were agreed to, not by the legislatures, but by judges or political hacks, there was less than 1% that were rejected. So was the election rigged? In one sense, yes. I think it's maybe better, from my perspective at least, to say that the election was unconstitutional. It did not follow the constitutional premises that are laid out in the United States Constitution for running elections. So with that, I want to spend some time listening directly to recent interview by Meet the Press, NBC News, of Donald Trump, and how he currently sees many of these issues and topics that I think many of the audience here will agree with, maybe have even heard before. But I think it's important because not that many people see things that are sort of online or that were even on television at one point in time, and there's not a lot of viewings of this. So let me take and slice and dice a little bit of that interview and maybe make some comments on it along the way. So the first question for Donald Trump is, you've been president, you understand the powers and the process and the administration of the executive branch. Why do you want to be president again?
Well, it's a very simple answer, and I can give it very easily. It's called Make America Great Again. Our country is in serious trouble. I don't think we've ever been so low in terms of certainly opinion, world opinion, and country opinion. People are devastated. They look at what's happening with millions of people coming in, millions of illegal immigrants coming into our country, flooding our cities, flooding the countryside. I think the number is going to be 15 million people by the time you end this, by the end of this year. I think the real number is going to be 15 million people. They come from prisons. They come from mental institutions. Insane asylums. They say, sir, please don't use that term, but it's true. They're terrorists at a level. You know, it was very interesting. On NBC, I saw a poll and I saw some statistics, and it said in 2019, there were no terrorists. They caught no terrorists. There was nothing that they saw. There was no anything. And now, this year, it's a record number like they've never seen before. So we did a great job at the border. We did a great job with the military. We did a great job with inflation. We had essentially no inflation. We had a great economy. We didn't have an Afghanistan disaster. We were getting out, but we were going to get out with dignity and pride, not the way they got out. That was a surrender and an embarrassment and horrible. We gave $85 billion worth of equipment to the Taliban. We had death, so much death and so much horrible destruction. And it was a terrible thing. I think it was the lowest point in the history of our country. Now, with all of that, we can change it and we can make America great again. And that's why I'm doing this.
Well, Mr. President, that kind of says it all, doesn't it? You want to make America great again. Now, I know when you first campaigned and you said you wanted to make America great again, that was because the previous administrations had not got us up to the level that you thought we were capable of. Now that you see, after your original term in office, that we have declined so rapidly, I think that same motto of make America great again almost gets back to when you were in office, make America great again when you were president. You certainly have outlined all of the issues or nearly all the major issues that would resonate with the public. It's always amazing to me that people are so tied into the Democratic Party and whoever is running with a D after the name that they ignore the real accomplishments that occurred during your administration. You were involved in so many things, even though you were under constant attack. Mr. President, one of the things the media seems to have picked up on more than the general public, I believe, is your comment about if you were reelected, there would be a lot of retribution. And that sounds like a lot of threats to people and, you know, what you would do and how you would carry it out, because you've been so persecuted unfairly in your time since, again, you came down the escalator through your presidency and post-presidency. What does retribution mean to you? Can you clarify that for people who will use that charge against you?
I think retribution is talking in terms of I have to protect people. What they're doing to people is so horrible. They're putting people in jail for long periods of time. Firemen, policemen, accountants, even lawyers, they're in prisons for years now and don't even have trials in some cases. And if you look at Antifa and other groups, practically nothing happened to them. They burned down Portland. They burned down Minneapolis. They took over Seattle. I mean, they literally took over a big chunk of the city. People died and nothing happened to them. We have to protect all people. When I talk about retribution, I'm talking about fairness. We have to treat people fairly. These people on January 6th, they went, some of them never even went into the building, and they're being given sentences of, you know, many years. No, it's a very, very sad thing. And it's, they're dividing the country so badly, and it's very dangerous.
Mr. President, I understand what you're saying about retribution. It's not to go after people, your political enemies, as the other side seems to be doing as well, not just to you, but to many others. And the idea that those January 6th people are held in prison without trial, being prosecuted when they weren't even there, that they were somehow connected with a group that might have been there. And yet many people also believe that there was a lot of FBI in the audience that were stirring things up. Many people and the videos of people going into the Capitol that were invited in, and there was no damage. That, you know, there were always a few. When you got a couple hundred thousand people, you're going to have some troublemakers. And I think there were some anarchists mixed in there that was highlighted by the media and the press and the January 6th committee. And that's not a fair representation of the hundreds of thousands of supporters for you that were there. So I don't think the media is ever going to be satisfied with your answer. They're going to look for something nefarious in your comments, and they're fearful that if you take over that you're going to be coming after the media even stronger than you have when you were a candidate and president, and going after some of their favored Democratic socialist candidates. Well, let's take a quick break, and we're going to come back and continue with this understanding of President Trump, who's leading in the Republican primary polls and looks to be leading in many of the key states in the general election. Be right back.
The Docs for Patient Care Foundation is your way to join the fight and become a member of an organization created by doctors for patients, dedicated to fighting for your healthcare freedom and preserving the doctor-patient relationship. Get a pen and paper. Write down www.docsforpatientcarefoundation.org. That's www.docsforpatientcarefoundation.org. Go to our site and please make a generous tax-deductible donation and join the fight today. Thank you.
Veteran-owned, America's Web Radio would like to thank all of our incredible patrons. We wouldn't be able to do this without you. If you are not already a patron, you can help us continue to produce some of the most informative and entertaining shows on the Internet by becoming a patron. Patrons of America's Web Radio are the first to receive information about new shows and links to the latest podcast episodes. Join now and receive a free gift while supplies last. For more information and to join our family, please visit www.patreon.com/AmericasWebRadio. If you have questions, contact us at gm@AmericasWebRadio.com. And as always, thank you for listening.
You're listening to America's Web Radio on the AmericasBroadcastNetwork.com. Thank you for listening.
Welcome back to America's Web Radio. Today we are focusing in on some interviews with President Donald Trump and how the media is going to be using some of his words against him, distorting him as they always have. And I wanted this broadcast on America's Web Radio to take a look at some of his answers and some of the questions that the media is going to be presenting to him to try to twist his words. Many of you are friends out there that may be thinking about whether they really would want to vote for an 81-year-old President Biden for re-election at that point in time when he's clearly losing his cognitive capabilities. And while they may dislike Trump's attitude and tone and tweets in the past, I think many people are coming around to recognize that his policies were what was making America great and independent and recognized nationally, and we were energy independent, closing the borders, and all those things that many of his supporters would list out a whole laundry list of accomplishments during his 4 years. And people are coming around saying, we did have better times. We were better off 4 years ago or three plus years ago than we are today. So I want to focus a little bit on the questions that I know that will come up about his constantly saying the election is rigged. And in fact, one of the many of the indictments that he's under now is because they're charging him with sedition and trying to unconstitutionally hang on to power. And he keeps saying the election was rigged. So let's ask him to explain a little bit more about what he means when he says the election is rigged. And as we talked about earlier in the previous session, to me, the word rigged is not the most appropriate word that I would use. He's smarter than me, so he can use the word rigged if that's what suits him. I think it was unconstitutional because there were so many things that were going on with the changes in the state laws, with the federal government getting involved, with social media inappropriately. I think that was all unconstitutional. So let's listen to what the president says when he is asked about what he means when the election was rigged.
The election was rigged. There's no question about that. There's so much proof on it. Even if you go to the more modern day proof with the, they call it Twitter files, FBI and Twitter, or you take a look at the Amazon stuff or the Google stuff, or you take a look at 2,000 mules, you take a look at all of the ballot stuffing that's on tape, you take a look at the fact that the legislatures didn't approve a lot of the things that were done in the elections and they had to approve. And we could go on forever. We could go on forever. But we have thousands of essentially motion pictures of people stuffing the ballot box. People that went and voted in one place, another place, another place, as many as I understand, 28 different places in one day with 7, 8, 9 ballots apiece. They can't do anymore because it would look too phony. These were professional people. They were stuffing the ballot boxes. It's there. There is so much evidence that the election was rigged.
Well, you talk about unfair prosecution and retribution. I think back to the impeachment trial that you went through, the first impeachment. Democrats had control of the House, and all you need is a majority to file the articles of impeachment, and they were more than willing to do that because you were such a strong president working against their socialist policies, in my opinion. So they're going to bring that up again in any campaign. How do you respond or respond any differently maybe than you have in the past? But what's your response to this whole idea that you were doing a quid quo pro with Zelensky when you made that call trying to get him to raise issues about Biden actually doing a quid quo pro of saying, I'm not going to give you $1 billion unless you fire some prosecutor. What's your response to that so people in this audience can hear you more clearly without media interruption when you say that, or media over-talking your answers and confusing people when you're able to actually give a clear presentation in a forum like this?
My phone call was perfect. My phone call was saying, please investigate any crimes that you see. And by the way, I'm mandated to do that as the president of the United States. And it was really, really a call to congratulate him on winning the election. When you talk about quid pro quo, please don't talk about quid pro quo, because there was none in the call at all. Quo was when Biden said very strongly, we're not going to give him the $1 billion unless they get rid of the prosecutor. That's a quid pro quo.
So, audience, I hope you're hearing clearly President Trump's response. I am slicing out the interruptions from the interviewers who talk over him and don't let him make his point. And it's an interesting media tactic to ask a question, interrupt, create confusion about it. Don't let people really hear his answer because you're talking over him. And then when the other person, in this case, President Trump, stops talking because it's getting too confusing with two people talking at the same time, they make a negative comment at the end as if it's their opinion. So he's sort of debating the questioner, and the questioner has the last word. And Trump doesn't let that happen. He jumps back in and says, no, wait a second. You can't just say that and sort of move on to the next topic. He'll challenge it in most cases and not let that go. And many politicians don't do that. That's why the media's point of view is always presented. They say they're not biased or not liberal, but the reality is when a conservative, or in this case, President Trump, makes a comment, they want to sort of put an exclamation point of their own opinion at the end. So they're not really interviewing. They're trying to argue and debate and present their own points of view, not the point of view of any survey or of any polling or ask a legitimate question. They're trying to make their own point of view so that when their compatriots in the media look back and see this interview, they're saying, yeah, well, she's challenging him and she should have debated him as opposed to asking real journalistic questions. So that's sort of what's going on. Now, let's talk about another issue that will be brought up by people who are anti-Trump or constantly in themselves think about the past and about January 6th and about what they considered to be, you know, the mean tweets and his nature that they didn't like, his characteristics of attacking people, attacking individuals that they didn't like, ignoring totally his policies and the help that he was providing for American people and our security across the country and the world. They'll talk now that he is from the past and that his focus on the rigged election is in the past. And they'll say, well, Mr. President, you're looking in the past and the people want to look into the future. What does he have to say about this idea that he's being charged with just living in the past?
I have no focus on the past except that you have to learn from history. You have to learn from the past. We had an election that was very, very terrible. It was a terrible thing for our country. And you have to learn from that. You can't forget that.
Let's talk about the economy in the current Congress. Many in the Republican Party are talking about if they can't get a good deal, we ought to shut down the government. We need to lower our deficit. We need to decrease our spending. We need to decrease taxes, which historically have actually increased revenue. What is your feeling about the current situation and the deficit that we're currently facing? What should Congress do? Should they shut down the government?
If they don't get a fair deal, we have to save our country. We have $35 trillion in debt. We have to save our country. I'd shut down the government if they can't make an appropriate deal. Absolutely.
Well, the interviewer stayed on the current topic, which I think has sort of resolved itself. I don't know completely about the auto workers that were on strike. But President Trump has a particularly interesting twist on the auto workers and the unions and the auto companies and what's happening. He's looking at a bigger picture. It's not just a strike, but it's a sea change of developing electric vehicles, many of which will be made in China. So let's listen to his take on the auto workers' strike that was occurring at the time of this interview.
The auto workers are not going to have any jobs when you come right down to it, because if you take a look at what they're doing with electric cars are going to be made in China. The auto workers are not going to have any. I'll tell you what, the auto workers are being sold down the river by their leadership. and their leadership should endorse Trump. The reason is you got to have choice. Like in school, I want school choice. I also want choice for cars. If somebody wants gasoline, if somebody wants all electric, they can do whatever they want. But they're destroying the consumer and they're destroying the auto workers. The auto workers will not have any jobs. All of these cars are going to be made in China. The electric cars automatically are going to be made in China.
Again, it's a great media ploy to say, are you for this side or that side? And then whichever side you pick, you'll get the other side working against you. If he chooses, I'm working for the auto workers, or that's my side, then he's got businesses and the auto executives and companies against him. If he says he's working for the auto companies, then he's from just big business ripping off employees, and he gets the union workers against him. So he's a brilliant, he says he's not a politician, but he's been around politics enough. He's a brilliant answer. You say, no, both sides are being incorrect, and they're even thinking about a strike. The workers are being used by their union to think that they're going to get more money, and they ought to put more money into the coffers of the union. But the reality is that much of the production of cars, and I've listened to him when he actually went and talked to the union workers. He said they're making a big mistake. The problem is not fighting for more money or better benefits in some ways. It's fighting for the jobs, because these jobs are going to be taken overseas to China, where they're getting much better at making electric cars. And all the batteries that you would use for electric cars, the materials for the batteries are dominated by the Chinese, because they've got the raw materials for batteries in China. And where we've discovered some of those materials in the United States, the Biden administration actually shut down the use of those lands that are found on federal lands in many cases. So he's right in that the real issue is not the workers' benefits or pay or anything else. It's really about the future of making automobiles in the United States. And so he brilliantly doesn't take the bait for either side. So let's ask President Trump his thoughts on electric vehicles in general.
The electric cars are much more expensive, and they don't go far enough. So if somebody wants to take a little bit of a long, just like the trucks, if somebody wants to take a little bit of a long ride, let's go to Maine, or let's go to Kentucky from New York. You can't do it. I mean, you have to stop all the time. They don't go far enough. They're very expensive. They have a lot of drawbacks. Now, with that being said, some people are going to want them. Some people are going to travel short distances. What they're doing with our trucking industry is a disaster, because they want all electric trucks. And a truck on a large, with a large tank, large gasoline or diesel capacity, can go up to 2,000 miles. An electric truck goes 300 miles. So what are these guys going to do? They're going to stop every 300 miles and recharge their truck and spend 3 hours?
Well, it's time for another commercial break. We'll come back with more of President Donald Trump. I hope the audience out there is getting a better perspective of his actual answers without the constant interruption of the interviewer. So you can hear his words directly. You can interpret it for yourself. You can see the logic in it as I do, or you can see the conflicts, I suppose, if you are an anti-Trumper, but I think it's very interesting and fascinating to listen to his actual answers without the media or the interviewer constantly interrupting. So let's take a quick commercial break, and we'll be right back.
If you want the truth about politics, medicine, weapons, classic cars, and more, you'll want to tune in to America's Web Radio. You can listen to all of your favorite shows live at www.americaswebradio.com or on demand on iTunes, Spotify, or your favorite podcast app. That's www.americaswebradio.com.
In 2009, the membership organization Docs for Patient Care was founded. People all around the country wanted to participate in the efforts of this group, and they wanted to join, but they were unable to do so unless they were physicians. It's for this reason that the Docs for Patient Care Foundation was created. Now, everyone can join the fight and become a member of an organization created by doctors for patients, dedicated to fighting for your healthcare freedom and preserving the doctor-patient relationship. While you're at your computer, please go to www.docs4patientcarefoundation.org. That's www.docs4patientcarefoundation.org and make a tax-deductible donation and join the fight along with us. Thank you.
You're listening to America's Web Radio on the AmericasBroadcastNetwork.com. Thank you for listening.
Welcome back to America's Web Radio. Today we are listening directly to the responses to specific questions from President, ex-President, former President Donald Trump, the leading candidate for the Republican nomination and leading in many key states for the general election, according to polling from multiple sources right now. So it's important that we all step back and listen to what he is saying. I would ask people who have not been Trump voters or supporters in the past to listen to his answers and think about it that it's not Donald Trump. I know you may have, many of you out there may have problems with his personality, with his attitude towards the media and others, but listen to his policy issues and how he's going to help the average American, help us become great again, to get our economy moving in the right direction, to lower inflation, lower interest rates, secure our borders, get us out of unnecessary wars around the world, keep the peace. Listen to it as if it's not Donald Trump if you've not been a supporter of his. If you've been a supporter, listen to the answers that he is giving without the interruption of the moderators over talking him so that you can really understand and hear what he's saying. So in this segment, I want to start off by asking him about the current interest rates and what he thinks the problems and issues are with high interest rates. And then we're going to talk a little bit more about the economy in general. But first, his comments about interest rates.
Right now, interest rates are very high. They're too high. People can't buy homes, they can't do anything. I mean, they can't borrow money. The banks don't have the money. The banks aren't lending the money. So the banks, by the way, Chase Manhattan Bank, Bank of America, they discriminate against conservatives. It's a disgrace, and they shouldn't be allowed to. And I'm going to do something about that. But you take a look at banks throughout the country, and I think because of the regulators, but you take a look at Bank of America and Chase, they discriminate against conservatives.
You know, the interviewer tried to move on quickly to another topic on the economy, but I think what he was saying, because I've heard him say it in other formats about this discrimination against conservatives, the typical classic example is these banks won't lend money. In some cases, banks, whether it's these banks or other banks, won't allow transactions to occur, for example, if they are gun shops. And or other conservative-oriented businesses, the Second Amendment businesses, or businesses that they don't think properly fit into their idea of the freedoms that people ought to enjoy, and they use the financial industry to punish people who have something other than the woke mentality and ideology. So I think that's what he's really talking about. But let's move on then to another key topic that people will find very different under the Trump administration, is getting inflation under control and doing it to a large degree by starting with the energy independence that was established under his administration that drives so much of the cost for every single good that we have, either the transportation of the goods or the actual products themselves involve some derivative of an oil-based product cycle. So let's hear what he has to say about drilling and energy needs of this country at this point in time.
But I would get inflation down because drill we must. We will be drilling for oil. We are going to become, again, energy independent. We are going to reduce our debt because we're also going to become energy dominant. You know, we were ready to go dominant within a matter of months. We would have been making so much money. We have more oil, I call it liquid gold, under our feet than any other country, Saudi Arabia, Russia. And there's no country with more, and it's sweet. It's the finest. We have the best. You know, we're taking it from Venezuela. You know what it is? Tar. We had low interest rates. We had the best housing market ever. We had people buying homes. Things are not going right now very well for the consumer. Bacon is up 5 times. Food is up horribly, worse than energy. Energy is starting to go up at a level that we haven't seen in a long time, meaning a couple of years since he took over, because I had energy prices very low. I had gasoline very low. We have to get the energy down, which they will never do. And they kept it artificial because they took the strategic reserves, which I had a lot to do with filling up for the first time ever. They took the strategic reserves and he issued it to everybody so that he could keep the gas prices down. Now, strategic reserves are at the lowest level they've ever been at, and we need that for war. Well, no, the big factor is the fact that he took that oil. He wanted to have low gas prices for an election, and now we have nothing left.
Mr. President, you've talked about lowering corporate taxes. Let's have your presentation to this audience about what your interest is in lowering, say, corporate income taxes or any income taxes for that matter, when President Biden wants to increase corporate taxes from currently about 23% to 28%. You've talked about lowering them. What's your opinion on corporate taxes in particular?
I'd like to lower them a little bit if we could, but what I want to do is we have to get some income coming in. You know, when I lower taxes, we took in more revenue. But when I lower taxes, I cut taxes tremendously, created tremendous jobs. But more importantly, we had more revenue with lower taxes than we did with higher taxes.
You know, Mr. President, the media has a very short memory, as do many people, quite honestly. And they will say that you added $8 trillion to the national deficit. And so your fiscal policies, your economic policies really didn't work very well during your presidency. You just spent money like Democrats. How do you explain or counter that argument, which is going to be brought up because people really don't have a memory of the past? So educate our audience here, and so they'll be prepared to educate their friends when they bring up the same topic that many in the media do today.
We had a thing happen to us. We had the greatest economy in history, and then we got hit with COVID. And we had to keep this beautiful thing going. And if I didn't do that, if we didn't put some money in, nobody knew what COVID was. Remember, this was a new thing that came in. Somebody said it's dust coming in from China. It came from China. They try and denied it, or they tried for a little while, and we didn't let it. It came from Wuhan, actually, which now they agree. Everybody's now agreeing that it came from Wuhan. I said that years ago. But we had to do things that were very severe. We had to let some money come out. We were on the verge of doing something that was amazing. We were going to have energy at a level bigger than Russia and Saudi Arabia combined. That energy was going to be sold to Europe and all other places. The prices would have come down. We were going to make a fortune, and we were going to start paying off debt. Instead, we got hit with COVID. People didn't need oil because nobody was driving all over the world. I mean, frankly, it was a disaster. What China did to the world with COVID is something that we're going to get to the bottom of, and they have to pay something back. You know, nobody can pay back the cost of all those lives and all the money that was lost, but nobody can pay back the lives and all of the damage that was caused. We were going to make a fortune off our energy. We were going to send the energy to Europe. Europe was going to pay us tremendous amounts of money.
Let me move on to a slightly different but very related topic, Mr. President, and that is about Ukraine, the war going on there, what Russia would have done if you had been president, and the impact of oil prices on Russia's ability to carry out that war.
And I'll tell you, you would have never had the Ukraine monster at all. It would have never happened. Russia would have never got, just by sheer force of personality. But beyond personality, what happened is when oil hit $100 a barrel, and by the way, it's right there right now again, Putin makes a fortune on this war. You know, everybody said, oh, he can't afford it. If Biden allowed my policies to stay in place, oil would right now be at $40 a barrel, and Putin wouldn't be able to afford them.
Mr. President, let's change topics substantially now. Let's talk about abortion. It's been a problem for the Republicans. They don't seem to have the right communication or the right policies. whatever it is that's not resonating with the American people. They want more access to abortion. Apparently, that's a women's rights issue, and Republicans seem to have lost substantially in the last two elections to a large degree with Democrats pushing the idea of being pro-choice, pro-abortion for those of us on the other side. What do you say about the abortion issues and policies that are going on in this country, and how do you stand on the issue of abortion?
Roe v. Wade, for 52 years, people, including Democrats, wanted it to go back to states so that states could make the right. Roe v. Wade, I did something that nobody thought was possible, and Roe v. Wade was terminated, was put back to the states. Now, people, pro-lifers, have the right to negotiate for the first time. They had no rights at all. Because the radical people on this are really the people, the Democrats, that say after 5 months, 6 months, 7 months, 8 months, 9 months, and even after birth, you have a Virginia governor, previous governor, who said after the baby is born, you will make a determination, and if you want, you will kill that baby. I was able to do something which gave at least pro-life people a voice. Now it's going to work out. Now, the number of months will be determined. This is an issue that's been going on for a long time, and it's a very polarizing issue. Because of what's been done and because of the fact we brought it back to the states, we're going to have people come together on this issue. They're going to determine the time, because nobody wants to see 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 months. Nobody wants to see abortions when you have a baby in the womb. I said, with Hillary Clinton, when we had the debate, I made a statement, rip the baby out of the womb in the ninth month. You're allowed to do that, and you shouldn't be allowed to do that. The Democrats are able to kill the baby after. No, let me just tell you what I do. I'm going to come together with all groups, and we're going to have something that's acceptable. Right now, to my way of thinking, the Democrats are the radicals. Because after 4 and 5 and 6 months, but you have to say this, after birth, you have New York State and other places that pass legislation where you're allowed to kill the baby after birth. What's going to happen is you're going to come up with a number of weeks or months. You're going to come up with a number that's going to make people happy, because 92% of the Democrats don't want to see abortion after a certain period of time. But we'll come up with a number. But at the same time, Democrats won't be able to go out in 6 months, 7 months, 8 months and allow an abortion. You have some states that are allowed to kill the child after birth, and you can't allow that. And both sides are going to come together, and both sides, and this is a big statement, both sides will come together, and for the first time in 52 years, you'll have an issue that we can put behind. The most powerful people that are anti-abortion are okay with that now. And you know what? They weren't okay with that even a year ago.
Well, I hope all Republicans hear that message from Donald Trump. He has carved out an in-between area of negotiating around number of weeks, number of months, whatever it is. But based on science, when does the baby's heart rate start? When does the pain felt? And if you want to take a purist standpoint, it's at conception. He's not taking that standpoint. So people who are anti-Trump because they think he is going to wipe out the ability to have abortions, he's not saying that at all. But whether people will actually hear that is one of the reasons I wanted to put that full segment on and give his response without the interruption of the moderator. If you actually listen to the presentation on YouTube or other interviews, you'll hear that you can hardly get his answer because of the constant interruption of liberal moderators who want to hang Republicans on the issue of abortion and try to force him into a corner, and he doesn't take that bait. Let's take a quick commercial, and we'll be right back.
Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls of all ages, join me, Roger B., every Tuesday at 1400 hours right here on America's Web Radio for the Locked and Loaded Show. We will talk about guns, weapons, ammo, gun accessories, prepping, and so much more. So be sure to join us every Tuesday at 1400 or 2 p.m. for Locked and Loaded on America's Web Radio.
The Docs for Patient Care Foundation is your way to join the fight and become a member of an organization created by doctors for patients dedicated to fighting for your healthcare freedom and preserving the doctor-patient relationship. Get a pen and paper. Write down www.docsforpatientcarefoundation.org. That's www.docsforpatientcarefoundation.org. Go to our site and please make a generous tax-deductible donation and join the fight today. Thank you.
Veteran-owned, America's Web Radio would like to thank all of our incredible patrons. We wouldn't be able to do this without you. If you are not already a patron, you can help us continue to produce some of the most informative and entertaining shows on the internet by becoming a patron. Patrons of America's Web Radio are the first to receive information about new shows and links to the latest podcast episodes. Join now and receive a free gift while supplies last. For more information and to join our family, please visit www.patreon.com/AmericasWebRadio. If you have questions, contact us at gm@AmericasWebRadio.com. And as always, thank you for listening.
You're listening to America's Web Radio on the AmericasBroadcastNetwork.com. Thank you for listening.
Welcome back to America's Web Radio. This is the last session, last segment this week, and today we are interviewing and reviewing an interview with President Donald Trump around major issues. Should he win the presidency back? And last segment we finished up with some discussion of abortion. Since that's been a major issue for the last two campaigns, that the Republicans have been on the losing side when they thought there was going to be this great red wave and the Republicans going to be so victorious even in this last recent election. It's just not happening. It's because abortion seems to be a much bigger issue than they're willing to let on. So after Roe v. Wade, Republicans have taken some pretty big hits. So I'd like to hear from President Trump how he feels about the abortion issue and maybe why the Republicans have been so off on this and how he might pull them together with much better messaging and a better policy position since he's so good on policy issues. So, President Trump, tell us your position on what Republicans should be saying about abortion.
And Republicans should go out and say the following, because I think the Republicans speak very inarticulately about the subject. I watched some of them without the exceptions, et cetera, et cetera. I said, other than certain parts of the country, you're not going to win on this issue, but you will win on this issue when you come up with the right number of weeks, because Democrats don't want to be radical on the issue. Most of them, some do. They don't want to be radical on the issue. They don't want to kill a baby in the seventh month or the ninth month or after birth. And they're allowed to do that. And you can't do that.
President Trump, you have been so attacked from the very first day and throughout your presidency. A lot of people wonder, with all the indictments that have been made and all the cases that are against you, and I know you say that those are Biden political opponent indictments, and I think a lot of people who have supported you and appreciate what you've done for this country during your presidency would agree that these are very strange legal theories. I think your supporters and including myself, would say that you're probably going to lose in these trials because they're Democratic DAs and Democratic judges, but that you'll win on appeal. Of course, by that time, you'll probably be president. But some people wonder, how in the world do you survive psychologically with all of these attacks on you? Most people would have wilted and gone away a long time ago or cut some deal to plead guilty or to accept some sentence just would put all this stuff aside. So how do you do it? Do you think about this all the time?
No, I don't really. I don't even think about it. I'm built a little differently, I guess, because I have had people come up to me and say, how do you do it, sir? How do you do it? I don't even think about it. These are corrupt people that I'm dealing with. They're destroying our country. I don't even think about it. All I think about is making the country great, making America great. Look, these are political. These are banana republic indictments. These are third world indictments. I see tremendous unfairness. I think very few people would have been able to handle what I handled. When I was coming down the escalator with Melania I was already under investigation because they saw how well I was doing in the polls. And it just got worse and worse. And we caught them. We said they were spying on our campaign. It turned out to be true. They had the fake dossier. That turned out to be true. It was paid for by the Democrat Party. It was all fiction. All of these things happened. Impeachment hoax number one, impeachment hoax number two. I've been treated very badly, and I've won every single time because I truly feel that in the end, we're going to win. I think we're going to win an election the likes of which nobody's ever seen before. I don't think anything's going to stop it. Nothing's going to stop it.
You know, one of the issues that's going to be right in the middle of the campaign, maybe even a Super Tuesday election in multiple states, is the case in Georgia where it's claimed that President Trump was trying to inappropriately make up 11,000 plus votes in order to win the state of Georgia. And the big debate against Brad Raffensperger, who I personally happen to know is a very strong conservative, upright, honest. And let's hear what President Trump has to say and what even Raffensperger has to say now that time has passed and there's been a review of this whole issue and whether or not Trump did something inappropriately. So, Mr. Trump, tell us your view of what happened in the state of Georgia with that phone call.
Many top legal scholars, almost everyone, but many top have analyzed that phone call. That was a phone call made in front of, I guess, 7 or 8 lawyers. Brad Raffensperger, the head, who, by the way, last week said, I didn't do anything wrong. He said that was a negotiation. Brad Raffensperger, who I was dealing with, I appreciate that he said that. When I spoke, I knew I was probably being taped. I didn't ask, but I knew I was probably being taped. You know, they illegally taped me because they taped me in Florida. It's a two-party state. You know that, right? So they illegally taped the call. But forget about that for a second. I knew that there were many lawyers on the phone from the other side. There were many people. There were many people on the phone. When I told them, I said the election was rigged. I said all sorts of things about the election. Brad Raffensperger, who again last week said I didn't do anything wrong because what I said was very simple. I got cheated in this election. Cheat is like 11,000, whatever the number was, which we're close to getting in court, as you know. If we got access to those votes, if we look in, you will find numbers that you wouldn't believe. More importantly, though, let me just say, we had many people on the line. When I said, I spoke for an hour. I knew that many people were on the line. I knew that it was the only, I happen to be a really smart person. Who is going to be talking badly when I have lawyers and many other people on the line? Nobody's going to say something bad. But if it was bad, why didn't they say, sir, that was very inappropriate of you to say. Nobody said that. Nobody said, sir. It was only a long time after the call that somebody said, oh, maybe he said something wrong. If I said something incorrect, one of the lawyers for the state of Georgia, which I love, one of those lawyers would have said, sir, you have to take that back. If I said something wrong on the call, he or one of his many lawyers that were on the call would have said, it's inappropriate what you just said. Nobody said that. I called to complain about an election.
Okay.
And I have every right to do that.
Now, listeners to this program, I want you to think about this, that the so-called journalist who is conducting this interview keeps saying she's going to get into substantive issues like the economy and border crossings and foreign policy and all those issues, but she keeps coming back to the same issues of the indictments and all the negative things that the media has been portraying. And he has got good answers for that. Now, what I have to tell you is that in order to get his full answer, his full complete answer, so that this audience can actually understand what he's saying, I had to cut and slice and dice the interruptions that were consistent throughout this interview by the NBC so-called journalist again. So you're getting the full picture of what his answer is so you can judge for yourself as opposed to her coming in and saying, oh, that's not true, that's not true, that's not true. Look at the facts and decide for yourself. She had no facts on her side to say it's not true. She would just blatantly say something's not true while he's providing facts to support his own position. So let's go to another topic that the media is going to keep hitting on during any Trump election process, either in the primaries or in a general election. That is the issue of the documents at Mar-a-Lago that they claim he held inappropriately or illegally.
It's a fake charge by this deranged lunatic prosecutor who lost in the Supreme Court 9-0, and he tried to destroy lots of lives. He's a lunatic. So it's a fake charge. But more importantly, the tapes weren't deleted. In other words, there was nothing done to them. And they were my tapes. I could have fought them. I didn't even have to give them the tapes, I don't think. I think I would have won in court. When they asked for the tapes, I said, sure, they're my tapes. I could have fought them. I didn't even have to give them. Just so you understand, though, we didn't delete anything. Nothing was deleted. Number one, the statement is false. Much more importantly, when the tapes came, and everybody says this, they weren't deleted. We gave them 100%. I offered them. I said, if you want to look at tapes, you can look at them.
Okay, the final thing we're going to include from this interview, she keeps going back to each and every item rather than talking about real policy changes that he'd make from the Biden administration. The interviewer here wants to talk about January 6th. So, President Trump, tell us your feelings about January 6th, how you saw it and how it went down, so we can clarify the record here.
So let me just tell you about January 6th. First of all, I had very little to do with January 6th. I was asked to speak. And I was the president of the United States. I'm allowed to do that. But I was asked to speak. Other groups, I think it was women's groups, a lot of people were involved in that. And it was incredible. It was incredible. It was, I think, the largest group I've ever spoken. You never see that. You never see pictures of the group that I was speaking to. I think it was the most people I've spoken to some very large groups. Hundreds of thousands of people were there, and it was a beautiful, beautiful sight. But just so you understand, I went and I spoke. And by the way, peacefully and patriotically, and all of that which wasn't reported, but when I spoke, I have had senators go up. They said, I've never heard you speak so moderately. And then I went back. I wanted to go down peacefully and patriotically to the Capitol. Secret Service, who I have great respect for, said, sir, it's better if you don't do that. It could be unsafe because they didn't mean because of riots. Because, you know, it takes one guy with bad intentions, okay? So I didn't have a dispute with them. You know, you had that one person said, I grabbed the man around the neck. Actually, I wish I was so strong to be able to do that. These are all tough guys, smart guys. You mean that I was in the Beast? And she said, I was in the Beast, and the Secret Service didn't win. So I took a guy who was like a black belt in karate and grabbed his neck and tried to choke. And I have great respect for Secret Service, by the way. They're fantastic. The Secret Service said, sir, it would be better if you didn't. I said, I'd love to do it. They said it would be better. And so we went back to the White House.
So, President Trump, what about the story about you offering to have troops come in, that you had contacted Nancy Pelosi and or the mayor of Washington, D.C., and they turned it down? Did you actually make that request in anticipation of some troublemakers that might be in this large crowd?
I offered 2 days before, 2 or 3 days before, 10,000 soldiers, right? And they were going to go because everybody was telling me, I knew it was going to be big in terms of the crowd, because everybody I spoke to said, hey, I'm going down on January 6th. I'm going down. I'm going to listen to your speech, et cetera. And there were other speakers. I wasn't the only speaker. There were many speakers. But wait a minute. I offered 10,000 people to the mayor of Washington, D.C., Nancy Pelosi, both of them, Nancy Pelosi and to the mayor of Washington. And they turned it down flat. And the police commissioner was very nasty about it to her. And he testified. And here's what happened. The January 6th Unselect Committee, the Unselect Committee destroyed all the evidence, and they destroyed all the stuff having to do with Nancy Pelosi, and they wouldn't let her testify. We said, why isn't she testifying? You know, it was a whole rigged deal. Why isn't she testifying?
Well, let's stop there with that good question. Why didn't Nancy Pelosi testify to the January 6th committee? Obviously, there was some cover-up, at least from my perspective, in reviewing and watching all this unfold. So there you have it, audience. I hope you stayed with us. You have Donald Trump uninterrupted, being able to explain what was happening in so many areas that the media just won't let go. They try to continue to focus on the past. He's answered those questions on the past. He's looking for the future. And I think the American people are looking to a future that's very similar to his administration which was in the past, because we now have an example of how good it could be if we were under a President Trump. Join us next week for more politics on America's Web Radio.
The views, opinions, and content of the show hosts and their guests appearing on America's Web Radio are their own and do not necessarily reflect those of the station.
You're listening to America's Web Radio on the AmericasBroadcastNetwork.com. Thank you for listening.